This is a Saturday Night Live Friday speaker meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous held at Westgate West in San Jose, California, March 3, 2000. Our speaker is Mario R. Campbell, California. The original recording of this meeting is kept in the SNL tape library. Please observe the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous and do not play this recording for commercial or entertainment purposes. Please do not break the anonymity of the speaker or any other AA member at the public level. Thank you.
Thanks, Kim. My name is Mario. I'm an alcoholic addict. Oh, that was cute. Okay, it's okay to have coffee while I'm up here speaking. I want to thank Mark for asking me to be the speaker here. This is the third time I've had the opportunity, and this is my home group, so this is the only place I've been going to do a speaker meeting. And next month, if I stay sober, and by the grace of God, I'll have 16 years. And so I guess it's mandatory that they ask you every 5 years plus to speak, even if they don't want to hear you or not. So that's all good. I took the liberty of writing some things down, and the reason why I did that is because I wanted to, first of all. And second thing is, if you know me, a couple of my partners back there can attest to it, I forget things. And you know, I forget how it was, I swear to God. And you know, we talk about in this fellowship that you better not ever, ever, ever forget the last drink. And I assure you, I've never, ever forgotten that weekend prior to the last drink. But you know what? I got a forgetter here, and I used to think it was one of my biggest defects of character. I'm real bad on names, and I don't do it out of disrespect. I'm real bad on remembering things of the past. And you know what? That's become one of my biggest assets in sobriety, forgetting all that wreckage of the past and stuff. It has, man. You know, I used to dwell on it, and I was worried about going back to school, and I had to take some computer classes for my job. And I've been with the same company for 28 years, and I was really worried about it. You know, it's kind of bumming me out. And my buddy Mike B., I talked to him when they sold the company, and I'd share with my sponsor about what's going to happen to me. And you know what? I went back there, and I took these classes, and it's all good. You know, it's not no big deal. And you know what? There was 15 people in the class, and I wasn't the center of attention like I wanted to be. You know, they weren't focused on me, on how I was doing there. And that was real good. And what I wanted to touch on first was, you know, the perception people have of me. Yeah, I'm amazed. Last week, this guy named Tony Tony and Karen from Hollister, fantastic people. Tony comes up to me, and he says, "Hi, Mario." And I was talking to him, and I said, "Hello." And Tony delivers, or he was delivering, working for Airborne, packages to my wife 5 days a week at the publishing company she works for in Los Gatos. And he's told me a number of times, "Man, your wife, is she just got a fantastic personality? She's just a dynamite woman, and she's always so." When you come and greet her, man, she's always so happy, you know, and she's, you know, she's just a really nice person. And then a dude looks at me and he says, and he pauses and he says, "And I can't understand how two people, you know, so different," because, no, he goes, "because I know we're supposed to talk about, and I will. But I want to tell you something, and this has nothing to do, I don't want anyone here to do it, it's none of my business, but, you know, I gave up the breathing sticks again about 3.5 weeks ago. Those are called cigarettes. And I smoke a lot, man. I like it in the morning, man. And I've been having these dreams. Now remember, I'm the kind of guy, and I'm telling you the truth, I forget things. I don't remember when I wake up, if I had dreams, I don't remember unless it was a nightmare, something bad. And for the last 3.5 weeks, man, I remember every single morning what I dreamed about. I don't know what that's about, but I'm going to tell you about one dream. It happened a week ago. Okay? I woke up, and it was at 5 o'clock in the morning. I woke up, and it was like I was still in a dream, you know? And it was like, okay, there I was, walking down Cherry and Hillsdale, there's a park right there. I had a six pack of Bud Light. I had my softball clothes on and my hat, and I was walking, and to the right there were two guys playing softball, and I don't know how two people can play softball. You need more than that, you know, so I didn't want to play with them. Then I went up a little farther, and there was about 15 people playing softball, and they weren't as good as me. And then I woke up. Okay, well, where am I going with it? I don't know. I just wanted to share with you that I had that dream. You know, I did. But the deal was, is today, and I know why I wanted to share that. I just wanted to let you know, today, I got a thing in me called a committee, and I learned it the first week I got here in the program. And the committee tells me, when someone gets up in here and says, and I believe them, hi, my name is so-and-so, and I'm a real alcoholic, I'm back there saying, yeah, and I'm one of those kind of guys that just barely qualifies. That's me back there. And you know what? If you're an alcoholic or an addict, it's like being pregnant. You can't be a little bit pregnant. You're either pregnant or you're not. Okay, and my committee tells me, you know, you're just going to too many damn meetings. You know, well, I only go to a meeting every 48 hours or sooner. You know, and my committee tells me that the same people talk all the time, and sometimes it's not you, Mario. You know, and it's like, and so this committee, it doesn't mean shit to me, man. It's still there. It was there a week ago. And what I get to do is, you know what, I don't freak out on it. I think. And I know I'm always going to have this committee, and it's not as bad as it was before. You know, it's a hell of a lot better. So if you're new and you're having these kind of dreams about drinking, I could lie to you and tell you they go away, but, you know, 15 years plus, and I still have those kind of dreams. I don't have them every day, but I had this. And I don't drink Bud Light. Swear to God, I've never drank light beer. Ever. I don't understand why. And then so I start picking the dream apart. Who would go to a park with a six-pack, and someone's going to say only a six-pack, but without ice? What's up with that, man? You know, I don't drink. I wouldn't drink warm beer. I would just drink vodka because you don't have to chill that, you know? I don't know if it makes sense to you. Okay, I think I'll talk about how it was. Okay. Quickly here, Mario. Came from a place called Richmond down the road, 70 miles, Richmond, California, man. And I'll get through this kind of quick. I can remember vaguely that I was 5 years old. And the only reason I remember that is because my mom told me I cut school. I swear to God, I cut school. I went to school and they had that sleep time where you're supposed to lay down after they give you milk and graham crackers. And I split from class and I walked home. And that was my first experience with getting in trouble at school, you know. And then I remember my parents were divorced. And I guess it was before I was five. So that's all good. So I got my mom, three older brothers, and me. Went across, lived in my wife says it was a ghetto. I call it the projects. Lived there till I was about 10. To me, it was good stuff, man. It was good stuff. My mom worked all the time. My grandma took care of us. Grandma didn't speak English. She's a Mexican lady. It was all good. There was a lot of fights. I was young, so I was protected. I had three older brothers. And all the time, there was fights. And I remember I used to get scared sometime going to school. And the deal was, I fit in as a Mexican. I'm Mexican-Italian. At that time in my life, I fit in as a Mexican because you needed to fit in as a Mexican or you needed to be African-American because that's all that lived in the projects. I remember one of you Okies lived there too, so we had one token Okie there, you know. And that's because this guy was in the service, and I remember they just came there for like 3 months and then they were gone. So, you know, so I lived there, and it was all good, except for the fighting part and being scared a lot, But it wasn't bad. I mean, I'm not using that as an excuse. That's just the way it was. And then the Great White Knight showed up, man. My mom worked for a computer chip place back in those days, and his name was Frank, and he was about 15 years younger than her, and they got married when I was 11. All good stuff. This guy did not know what the hell he was getting into. He never had any kids, man. He comes in there, and he got me and my three brothers, and my brothers... The two oldest ones belonged to clubs. They didn't call them gangs back there. They called them clubs. No, they belonged. They had their jackets and they had their colors and all their stuff, and they had their little territories. I was too young to be in a club, but I knew all about him, and I wanted to be, you know, like my older brother, and I wanted to be like my second oldest brother and stuff like that. Hey, this guy married my mom and said he was going to take us to San Jose, man. You know, and that would be around, I think it took about a year and a half, and they sold the house and all this other stuff. Well, I think I was about 11 when my buddy had a paper route, man. And I used to help him collect the money. You know, they had to go by once a month or whatever and collect money and stuff like that. And I was always this guy had money all the time, you know. And I had an allowance and shit. That didn't do anything for me. And so, I don't know. It was probably his idea about going to the liquor store and stealing some Seagram 7. Put it down right down here. And I'm not saying it's the first time I drank, because I don't remember the first time I drank. But I know that was the first time, man, we got a bottle between the two of us, and we started experimenting and drinking it. And I know instantly, and I'm not saying I don't think there was anything wrong with me before I took this stuff. But I do know that when I drank it, man, I felt like I should be in a club. You know what I mean? I felt good, man. I felt tough. I was kind of happy anyhow, but I felt kind of happy. I just felt different, man. I just felt, wow, you know. So we started stealing more and more, having people buy it for us. And we just started drinking. And we drank for effect. And I don't think I got drunk every single time, but I know that I bogarted it and I tried to get drunk. And you know what? And it worked okay for me. I got in some trouble, but I think a lot of people get in trouble if they start experimenting with hard booze. Then we moved. San Jose, East Side. Really nice, brand new home. The White Knight brought us. My brother decided he wasn't going to go, so he joined. He joined the Marines, went to Vietnam, and he came back. Thank God. And so the three of us packed up. Then they had a baby. That would be my little sister. And then we came to San Jose. And my second to oldest brother Oscar, he lasted 2 days, and then he was missing in action, you know, in San Jose. And then we found him 2 days later. He hitchhiked back to Richmond. He wasn't going to have anything to do with living here. And that's good, and they let him do that. Me, I think it was eighth grade or seventh. Summer was over, went to school. Piedmont Intermediate, man. Walked in there. Where I come from, you wear Levi's, brand new ones. You roll the bottom of them. Okay, they're rolled. It's like, I don't know if you ever seen them, probably some people. We used to roll our Levi's, cut the bottoms, roll them back up. And you know those movies, The Untouchables? I don't know what kind of hats those things were, but we wore those brim hats. We were like, this was before you had cholos, as far as I'm concerned, man. That's how we wore over there. So that's where I showed up to Piedmont Intermediate with. I had this hat, man. I had my rolled Levi's. I had my Big Ben shirt, and I come walking in there. And I was a little scared. But you couldn't tell I was scared. I swear to God, you couldn't tell I was scared, man. At the end of the day, I was in the principal's office. It was a lady. And this is what I did. I did it at the break. I see a group of surfers, you want to call them, over here. Then I seen these guys with blue jackets that were these cholos over here. And they weren't just Mexican. It was some Okies and whoever else. I went over to these guys and I talked to them, the surfers. And yeah, introduced myself because that's how I am. And I went over to these other guys and I talked and by lunchtime, I found out who the two baddest guys in this class, in this school were. It was only, what, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade? So at lunchtime in the bathroom, I caught one of the guys. I caught the guy from the cholo. And I hit him, you know, I got him before he got me, and then we got into a good fight inside the bathroom. Because, see, where I come from, you need to establish yourself immediately. And I was scared, I can tell you that now, kind of scared, but I went in there and I figured I have to kick this guy's butt and then I'll get respect at this place. Because I didn't know what to expect when I came in there. And we had a good fight, and I think I won. You know, because if you get the first shot off when he's not looking, you know, he's taking a pee and I'm firing away, man, you know. And then, you know, back out from then, you usually can win those kind of fights. And, you know, and then I went on, and I'm not a badass. Don't get me wrong. I don't fight people, man. But, you know, then I fought somebody else from the surfer side. I caught him on a Saturday night. And I got him at a party that I heard they were going to, you know. And then I was established, you know. And I just drank, man. I just drank. I didn't take no drugs. I didn't know a lot about the drug stuff. Went through eighth grade. Then I got accepted, and people found out I'm a jock. Played basketball and stuff, and got on all these teams. Then I went to ninth grade. Alcohol, drinking on the weekends, partying with the boys when I could, getting drunk. Not having too many repercussions. I mean, I'm, you know, getting drunk and throwing up and feeling bad, but, no law coming after me. My mom not finding out a lot. Me getting into some fights. But I just thought that was, I'm not going to say normal, but I was okay with that kind of stuff. Then in ninth grade came, I got introduced to not only hard alcohol, but I got introduced to what they call in those days reds and yellows. I was off to the races, man. I was off to the races. A combination, the right combination, of alcohol and these downers. And I'm getting all excited right now about shit. I better pray. Anyhow, it just took me to another level, man. You know, and I liked it. I liked that high. I liked being a. I couldn't feel no pain, you know, and I don't want to beat on this. I didn't fight all the time, but when you're in reds and stuff like that, and you're drinking, you say things, you know, and then you know people react, and then you have to defend yourself and stuff, and you know, and you don't feel a lot of pain when you do that kind of stuff. When you're duking it out with somebody and you got that stuff, it's like pain medication. You can be hit and you can keep firing back, and I thought that was a good thing. I was kind of okay with that. That was in ninth grade. What I forgot to tell you was I met, well, I don't. She wasn't the sweetheart of my life when I met her, by the way, but I met my wife in eighth grade at the bus stop, man. Hey, with rolled Levi's on and one of them brim hats, I had to take the effing bus the first day of school. And I wasn't too happy about getting on a yellow bus with a bunch of people. Wasn't what I thought life would be about. I met her in eighth grade at the bus stop. I remember she had a white blouse on. Some things you remember. Seemed like she had some big breasts when you're in eighth grade. You know, to me, I mean, the blouse, I mean, it looked like, whoa, wow. You know, anyhow, that was my first impression of this lady. And we went around in high school off and on, and then I got married to her when I was about a year out of high school. We got married, and we've been married ever since. Almost 28 years. But anyhow, I got in a lot of trouble my sophomore year. One entire semester I got all F's or incompletes for an entire semester and flunked every single class. I was under the influence of sometimes drinking, sometimes using, and it wasn't a very good deal. And then I remember my mom came in and when you take these drugs and drink, you get loose, you know. And then she found, it wasn't a lot, but it was a lot to me. She found three bags of, two bags of reds and one bag of these yellows. And we used to have 1,000 of them in each bag, and she found them. And, you know, I didn't notice, my mom's pretty sharp. At least I think she was. She only took one to the police station, and she threw the rest down the toilet. Yeah, you know, and then they're messing with me and stuff like that. And then I got on. I got into other things. You know, I know this is AA, and I know it's all about drinking. And I drank. I swore to God I drank. But I got into selling stuff, and I got into selling psychedelics. And I got into taking that stuff. And I remember the, I don't know what you call them, narcos or whatever. They were parked. They don't make it that. They're kind of obvious. They were kind of obvious. If they're watching my house, it seemed like, what, four houses down. Just like on TV, you know, they're four houses down. They're in the car, and you know they're cars. And it's like you're not supposed to see them. I mean, I knew they were there, and I knew it was time to not to stop selling at my, from that house right there where I lived in with my parents, or my mom, my stepdad. I got in trouble again with the same product. I got busted at the Orchard with some stuff on me, and not enough in those days, I think, for them to do a lot of stuff to me. So then I got in trouble again in another orchard with my future wife. And we bought a gallon of Red Mountain, man. Somebody bought me a gallon of Red Mountain, and I thought Red Mountain was pretty good, and I drank a lot, and she drank some, and she got really sick, real sick, you know, like all over her blouse and everything like that, and I took her home, and there was, you know, no hanky-panky, I wanted to, but anyhow, there was no hanky-panky and stuff, but she got drunk, and the reason why I share that with you, to this day, I swear to God, to this day, my wife has never, ever, ever had another glass of wine. Isn't that something? She had Red Mountain, threw up all over, got the dry heaves and all that other stuff, and she says, this isn't good, I'll never drink it again. Definitely not one of us. Definitely not one of us. You know, shit, I just would have, you know, it was the bottle, man. I would have switched from gallons to half gallons. Maybe, you know, that's my thinking. But this lady, you know, so I got in a lot of trouble, and my mother said, you better go live with your dad, who is an Italiano guy, and he's not much on feelings, and I'll tell you what, he's the best dad in the world. And that's where he comes from, man. He's just not much on feelings, and I'm okay with it. We don't say, my dad has never, ever, and I'm okay with this today, said, I love you, Mario. That's not what he don't do that kind of stuff. He doesn't hug. I've hugged him in sobriety because Uncle George died his brother, and I gave him a hug. And there wasn't much of a hug coming back on the other. And that's good for me. That's okay. I'm okay with it because that's the way dad is. My dad loves me. My dad loves me. That's just the way he's brought up. So I had to go stay with him because I was getting in trouble. And I respect him a lot, and I kind of, I don't know, feared him or what, and I straightened out. I went over there, man. I got away from all these people, and I got into sports over there at Richmond High for about a year. Couldn't wait to get back over here. I got busted one time over there. And we won the TOC in baseball. And in those days, if you win your league baseball championship, this is varsity, and everyone else wins theirs, and then they all get together, and the leagues all play each other. And we played in Oakland, and they call it the Tournament of Champions. And I participated in that. So naturally, I don't know about the rest of these guys that are jocks, but I had to go out and celebrate. And I got put in the hall again for possession. You know, I was drunk, and I'd taken some stuff, and then I got rowdy at a park, and I didn't know when to say no, and then they arrested me, and then they found stuff in my possession. Wouldn't have happened if I wasn't drinking or using. I would have been able to probably say, you know, you're blowing it, Mario, you're getting in a fight here, I'm not going to blame it all on alcohol, but I was pretty messed up and on some other stuff. Hey, then I came back to, that was the only time I got in trouble over there in about 9 or 10 months. Came back over here. Decided that I needed to sell some stuff again to get some income. I mean, I'm not talking big time. I'm just real small time. Just so you know, if I can get this stuff for free. If I sell it, I'll get it for free and I won't have to pay because I wasn't working. I was playing sports, drinking, and using some stuff. I'm talking about taking these pay, selling asset and stuff like that. That's what I did. And I did that for about 3 months. And then my whole life got changed. I was about 17, man. I'll never forget it. I used to take these one little tablets, and they used to make you get closer to God. I used to think in those days, you know, you'd be all tripped out. And then I would take two because I want a better effect. And then one time I took three, and I had what we call a bad trip, and I freaked out. I'll never forget it, man. I was 17 years old, man, and all kinds of stuff happened in my head. And my brother said I tried to kill myself or jump out of some stuff, and it was just a nightmare, man, just a nightmare. And finally came out of it, and I'll remember the next day my mom came home. And I don't do this. And then I was, my brother and them were gone. And then I went in my mom's bedroom and asked her to hold me. And shit, I haven't thought about that in a long time. But anyhow, asked her to hold me. I got to let this go. And then I wanted to die, you know. And without going into much details, it was a bad trip. So from that moment on, I know I wanted to, and I'm not into killing myself. I mean, that was the only time, that 24 hours was the only time that I could think about ever that happening. But I just wanted to end it. Couldn't deal with reality. And then, as time went on, things got better. And I decided from then on, that when that bad trip occurred, I would never, ever, ever lose control again. So I wanted to deal with life on a daily basis, and I wanted to play sports in high school. So I figured out how to do it to survive out there. What I did was I drank, didn't smoke any of this pot shit anymore, as far as I was concerned in those days. Wasn't going to take any more of these downers that are bad for you, in my head. So I switched to alcohol, mostly beer and some, and not a lot of whiskey, but some beer. And this is AA, and I apologize, kind of. And I switched to crank. Because I could always be in control on that stuff, as far as I was concerned, And that's what I did, man. And I just did my thing. I got out of high school, and I didn't graduate, because if you don't pass for a whole semester, you come up unit short. And I cleaned up my act my sophomore year to the best of my ability. I still did the snorting on the weekends or whatever, and drank, and I still got into some fights. I got into some trouble, just fights, but not big stuff. And then I didn't know this then, but I know that now. I suffered from very low self-esteem ever since that 17 years old, and just trying to fit in and make do to life. And I figured, you know what would be a good way out is to marry this lady who's madly in love with me. Okay, so I told her, well, when I get a job, I'll marry you. Well, I got a job at a grocery store being a box boy, so she said we probably need to get married, and I said, well, we got to wait for at least 15 days, and maybe she'll change her mind. I don't know. I was real scared, man. And we got married, man. So did I get married for the right reason? Probably not. Was I in love with her? Don't think I was too capable of being in love. Did I need her? Yeah. Was I comfortable with her? Very. And then I just started working for a grocery chain. And in that grocery chain, I decided, you know what, man? This is probably, you're going to be your future here. You need to stay here, do your thing, and make something out of your life. And 2 years later, we had our first kid. I'm partying, but what I'm doing is I'm doing controlled partying. Controlled partying is taking the amphetamine and a lot of alcohol, and not every day I wasn't drinking, but getting messed up and being in control, and meaning that not taking those downers or this other stuff where I would lose total control. Getting totally drunk to me wasn't losing control, not remembering what happened. To me, wasn't losing control, because normally the next day my wife would remind me of what I did. And I wasn't that embarrassed about it, because I was with a group of people that they would take care of me. I'd take care of my brother, my partner, they'd take care of me, and we didn't do things that were too crazy. It wasn't too good then. I wasn't a very good husband. I went out on my wife a lot. Did I do it because I was drunk? If you actually look at the track record, you'll say you were under this, and this when you did it. I did it when I wasn't drunk, so I'm not going to give it to the disease or to alcoholism totally. That was my lifestyle, being unfaithful, partying, and not being a very good husband, but always bringing a paycheck home, everybody. Always bringing a paycheck home. Be messed up and hung over or speeded out for all day, Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday comes, and not missing work on Monday, no matter what. My identity was, at that time, if I showed up for work, life was okay. And I did that. And we had two kids, man. We had one, she's 25 years old, is Rachel, and we had another one, it was Laura, who's 19 months behind her. And the first one, I was there, like a good soldier. I'm sure I partied. and celebrate it. And for the second one, I wasn't there. I wasn't there to pick her up from the hospital like you're supposed to, because I was out getting loaded and trying to find a hostage, you know, another woman and stuff like that. Wasn't a very good guy. Not too proud of that, but that's just the way it was. Then I just continued to work. The years went on. 24, 25, 26, whatever. Got arrested or got in trouble for a DUI. My deal was I like to drink at home. I was working in the grocery industry, and I was working from 11 o'clock at night to 8 o'clock in the morning, sometimes 1 mile from my house, sometimes 15 miles or 30, working in Morgan Hill. Would buy my beer and just drive home. My wife was a teacher's aide at school. I could do my whatever I wanted to do at home, and then usually get to sleep. So it was a long period of time where I didn't get in a lot of trouble. People didn't invite me. The in crowd I hung with when we were in our early 19 and 20s, those people did not invite her and I over their house for their social functions and their parties and, you know, and all that stuff anymore. And, you know, I know this today. I kind of knew it then, because when they invited us over, if I drank too much, then I get louder than I am now, and then I get into a fight, you know, and I disrupt things. And it's like, you know, that's what he didn't do it all the time, but that's what I do. I just lash out, man. I just want to fight. And for any reason, it seemed like. And so they didn't invite us to those functions. So I just drank at home, man. And I told my wife that the other day. I says, yeah, you know, thinking back, I did all my drinking at home. She says, not exactly. What do you mean? She says, well, remember the bar next to the grocery store? Frickin' Fracks or whatever that they call it. She said, you used to go over there all the time. Oh, I forgot. I said, no shit. I thought I only went there once or twice. She says, no, hon, you went there a lot. You went there a lot more than you think. I go, oh, and I wasn't trying to lie to her. I just forgot about it. It's just not part of my life today. You know? And I told her, I asked her last week, you know, honey, did I drink all the time? She says, you drank enough. She says, I says, because I tell people, you know what, I didn't drink all the time. She says, honey, you didn't drink 2 6-packs every day and stuff like that, probably for finance reasons, and then you knew you had to go to work. She says, but then you'd get drunk on the weekends and make an ass out of yourself. And I says, well, what about that white stuff? I says, I tell everybody I took that maybe once a month for a weekend and stuff. She says, my perception of that is you were on that all the time. And that's not true. I think she's wrong. But so you take it, being on all the time, running a night crew, you know, you have to stock fast, to me once a month, and then come up with a happy medium. And so I probably did more than I cop to, and not out of disrespect or I'm lying. It's just that I don't remember a lot of shit. I just thought it wasn't good, man. You know, and I wanted to survive, and then I did what I had to do, man. Okay, so what happened was, got a DUI. Never forget it. I was going from one party, softball game, and I was big on softball. I played 80 to 120 softball games a year from age 18 to age 30. I tried to participate in 80 to 120 games a year. I played tournaments and more tournaments, played on 3 teams to 4 teams a week. Before this, Twin Creeks was popular. I got involved. We got ranked in the state. We got ranked in the state many a times in the northern state. We went back and represented our part of the northern part of the state, went back and played. And the reason why I'm sharing that with you is because I've come to the realization today or many years ago that working and playing softball is how I measured my self-esteem in those days. How good I was on the field and showing up for work no matter what made it okay with everything else that went on in my life. You know, the drinking, the fighting, the lying, the cheating. As long as I did those two things, I was holding up my end of the deal in life. That's not how I want to live today. The DUI taught me one thing only. It taught me that when you're doing tequila, and this is one of the exceptions where I decided that somebody put them in front of me, and I know I hadn't done them in years, and I was drinking tequila, and they put these reds and yellows in front of me. I told them, man, I haven't done those in years. That's when I was a kid. And I took them, and I don't know how many I took, driving down the freeway after a softball tournament or a game or whatever, and I pulled over off the freeway on 17 by First Street, and I didn't pull my vehicle all the way off the freeway on the slow lane, and I'm looking in the glove compartment because somebody used a little piece of paper and he wrote the directions to this party, and the highway patrol comes pulling up, and what are you doing? Are you okay? And I said, yeah, I'm looking for a party officer. And I'm looking for this directions. And the guy, I'll never forget it. He says, we'll take you to a party. And they were in those days, I don't know how they do it now. In those days, they drove your car off the freeway in a residential area. Pretty nice of those guys, I found out. And then they arrest you. And I learned from that, you never, ever, ever take reds and drink and drive. It's okay to drink and drive, but eliminate the reds, as I proved it to myself. Yeah. So that's something I learned from that. You don't take the reds. Can you drink and drive? Hell yeah, in my opinion at that time. So that's what I did. And then my old... I was going to say old lady. Oh, shit. Cindy, did I swear? My wife caught me again, man. I went fishing. As I said, and I went fishing in my fishing clothes, army fatigues, colored shirt, army colored shirt. That's what I wear when I go fishing or hunting. And I was gone 2 days, and I came back, and I looked like this. And my wife said, you went fishing, you took all those clothes, you come back, you're dressed up, and you went out camping and fishing up in the hills. And then I said, well, honey, and everything like that. I didn't go fishing. I just had to get away so I could go on a little run for the weekend. And then I went fishing again. And she looked in the garage, and I'm not like I am today because of my buddy Mike V. I got like 9 fishing poles, but I only had 2 fishing poles. And one was broken, the other one worked good. And I didn't take my fishing pole. And she was out doing laundry. She noticed I didn't take my fishing pole. So she came looking for me. And she found me up. I don't know how she found me, but she found me at this apartment. And I was drinking, and I was doing some other stuff, and I wasn't alone. And the lady said she's had enough. And rightfully so, she had enough. I pushed her to a lot of stuff. So she said, you're out of here. Okay, so being the smart kind of guy I am, I said, I've been calling this hotline in AA and drugs for about 2 years now, and they always tell me at the other end, they always say, I was always loaded when I called them. It was always in the middle of the night when I called the drug line. And the guy at the other end sounded loaded, too. I'm telling you, the times I called, I'm sure he wasn't, but he sounded loaded to me. And I know I was always loaded when I talked to him. And the union, I used to call them, and this is for 3 years off and on, or 2 years, and they'd say, we don't have an outpatient program, because I wanted to go on Tuesdays and Thursdays and talk to somebody about my drinking and using. And they said, no, we got a 28-day program. So we went round and around, and then I decided, well, she's got me now. I'll join this 30-day or 28-day program and gear off my case and get back in the house. So that's what happened. That was the beginning. Okay, so did Mario come for the wrong reasons? Absolutely. Did I come to get her back? That's why I came to AA. Is it wrong? Absolutely not, in my opinion. I'm still here today. I don't care why a person joins Alcoholics Anonymous. We have what they call denial. Okay, I denied that I had a problem on the 11th day in recovery. It was on 4/20/1984. It's in my big book. I found out, and I read the book, and I went to these classes, and I found out, and I won't be able to say it right, but it says it in the book, probably page 25. Let's take a guess. What the hell? It told me that I'm going to go do one of two things. I'm either going to continue drinking and doing everything I do and bottling it out to the bitter end, or I'm going to find a higher power or a God. And I wrote that down, and I said, you know what, this is what I want to try. And when I first walked in there, that's not what I wanted to try. I came for her. And I said, you know what, man, maybe there's hope for me. I drink, I use, I lie, I cheat, and maybe I can try this thing out for a while. So I started to listen in this recovery place. Now, mind you, there were people in there that were worse than me, in my opinion, that should have been listening that weren't. One guy was doing heroin. His girlfriend was bringing, this is a recovery place, his girlfriend was bringing him these balloons, he was coming to visit him. And I was, you know, they said, oh, that guy's in here for this. He's becoming, you know, he's detoxing. And the guy's all happy and all this other stuff. And I go, oh, that's how they do that. They're all happy and everything. I thought it was what I read on TV or, you know, it's on TV. And the guy wasn't coming down, man. He was still doing it, you know. And it just pissed me off when I found out about that, because I was in there after my 11th day. I was in there for the deal. I was serious about this thing. They told me I had a disease. I said, Mar, you suffer from a disease. It's called alcoholism. You have a mental obsession coupled with a physical allergy. It's twofold. I said, okay. So I started studying. I got involved. This 20-day program. I did steps 1, 2, and 3 inside there. And I did. I wrote them out and did exactly what these people said. They critiqued it and said, no, no, no. Step 2, and I wrote more. And they critiqued it, and they said, yeah, okay, this makes sense. And then I figured out, okay, I've got 12 steps up here. I did 1, 2, and 3. I've been in the program here 20 days confined, and it says we go to step 4. Okay, I can do that. So I'm not about sharing what's going on in my life. No counselor, no member of AA, 20 days clean and sober. I know about the Catholic religion. I know that you can go to a priest and cut loose with him. I heard about that. So I ask him for a pass. You know, they don't give too many passes. They don't give passes anymore in that place. But they gave me a pass. I went to basketball. I went to church. I went to the confession booth. And this priest, I was 31 years old. I'm going to probably exaggerate. He looked like he was about 85 years old. He got in there, and I started to share step 4, which the way Mario sees it, you know, all the stuff. And I get out about 5 sentences, and he told me to leave. He told me to leave, man. Oh, what's up with this, you know? You know, this is not what they told me here, you know, and it was all about me, my presentation to the guy, you know. When I got to the part that, you know, I was telling him some stuff, and then I got to the part that I was married, and then I said something to the effect, I didn't get married in a Catholic church, she's a non-Catholic, just go see your own priest and where you live. Okay. You know, it blew me away when he said that. I didn't share with anybody. I went back to the recovery place, and guys' hearts don't get broken, but I'll tell you what, man, I felt bad. I went in there and I said, man, I'm trying to do this program. This guy wanted to be top. What the hell's going on? Wouldn't cut loose with the counselors in there about my past. And this counselor told me, he says, Mario, he says, when I graduate, if you can graduate from there, he says, I want you to have 6 months of sobriety before you get into 4 and 5. Got out. First thing I came through was on a Wednesday night, 47, Joanne M. was sharing the topic was sex. You know, and I'm all gun ho, and I'm on a pink cloud, and this lady wants to talk about sex. I'm going to talk about it. I'm not taking nothing no matter what. This lady wants to talk. That's not why I joined AA. You know, what's up with that, man? You got to go, you know, and really pissed me off. I sat at that meeting and stuff, but I'll never forget it. And she talked her experience, Drink and Hope, and she chaired the meeting, and then on a Saturday, and this was Saturday Night Live or Sunday, oh boy, was around, they were barbecuing a pig. And guess what? And these people played softball this Saturday Night Live. They had a softball team, not Saturday Night Live, but members of being a softball team, and on the weekends, all these people, Randy Pfeiffer and Michael O'Brien and bunch of other guys would play softball. So he said, "Oh, man, these guys play softball, man." And these guys, you know, and I like to kill things sometimes, eggs and deer and elk. Used to until I got paid sober. That's bullshit. I'll do it now. Better job now than I was then, too. But anyhow, it attracted me, man. I said, "Hey, this place, man, I'm going to keep coming back here." Softball, these they barbecue, they're having fun. Got active. You know, wasn't my home group because my sponsor, I didn't know I had to get the 29 and you're out. And this, I was coaching Grock Hawk. Kids were 7 and 9, I think. And I had to tell this coach that I have to leave for 30 days because a drinking problem. Didn't tell him about the other person. People think I got a drinking problem. I'll be back in 28 days to take over the team. The guy's name was Joe. He says, "You know, he got me by himself and went to soccer field, all the little girls because we coach girls." And he says, "You know, I thought you had a problem." He says, "I've been in this program for years. I'll be waiting for you when you come back." When he said it, didn't mean shit to me. Whatever, you know. I'll be back. You're not going to be the coach of my team when I come back. I'm taking it down. But it was my sponsor when I came back. And the guy, he's older than me, about 10 years, and he just grabbed me and took me, coaching, but he brought me over his house, took me to Prince of Peace Church, the Friday night meeting, and with 33 days of sobriety, or 34 days of sobriety, it was time to nominate a new secretary. He raised my hand. He said, "Mario will be secretary," and these people didn't know me. You know, somebody comes in brand new. And there was they had a set amount of days of sobriety that they wanted before you could do it. He vetoed all that stuff. He did. He said, "This guy's secretary," and I didn't know what I was getting into it for 6 months. But I'll tell you what, I used to go there like an hour, hour and a half early. I've been a grocery business, so I always bought cookies. And I had like 4 varieties of cookies, and I had to have my coffee, so it was just right. I'd have my cups nice and clean, and a closet there. And I was all proud to be a member of AA. It was a big deal. Less than 6 months of sobriety, he decided I should be a GSR. Whatever you say, sponsor, I'll do whatever you want. You know, no one wants to be one in the group. So he says, "You are," and voted me in. And I heard after I found out that wasn't, they weren't too happy with that, the group members in the beginning. I went down to, what do you call it down there, where you intergroup or... I went down there to sign up, and then I told them it's sobriety, and they told me I couldn't be one because I didn't have enough sobriety. But whatever, there's a requirement of so much time, so that didn't sit well with me. I didn't go back for 5 years to pay anything from them. But I let that resentment go. I did. And Joe was a great sponsor. Life was good. 6 months of sobriety, the wheels were falling off. I remember what Marty said. "Mario, you don't work step 4 and 5 until you have 6 months of sobriety because you'll be doing the steps with a stranger." I'm not telling anybody in these rooms to wait for 6 months if you're new. Hindsight, I definitely wouldn't have waited. I wish I had the balls to do it faster. Whatever happened, and I'm okay with that. I was driving down the road, and I was feeling bad, and all this stuff. Come on, I was stuffing it, and you know what? I don't have the solution of drinking to change the way I feel anymore. And driving on the road, and I said, "Okay, man, either get involved in this step number 4 and share with the sponsor on 5, or you just go back out. One or the other. What are you going to do?" So I did. And when I did it, I did it quick. I mean, I did it quick. I went down, I told my wife I needed to be by myself, and this is for me, and I wrote for 3 hours. 2 hours, maybe I'm exaggerating, that's all. But I was done, put it down. The next day, while I'm working, all I'm doing is thinking about, you know, did I leave anything off? Wrote some more things down the next day, about 20 minutes, and went to my sponsor's house shared. And what I found out, the reason why I did it so quickly, in my opinion, and got it written down so quickly, because I've heard other people share, and this is the right way, but I listened to a tape, and the tape, Father John Doe said, if you want to speed up things, take the one thing you don't want to write down that you're not going to share with anyone, you're going to take to your grave, put that first when you write it down, and everything else will be a lot quicker, other than just instead of writing everything else down and having that in the back of your mind about, am I going to share it or am I not? And I wrote that thing down first, and it was the worst thing for me, and everything else just spilled right out for me. And did I do a perfect step five? Hindsight? Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. It was perfect for that. More stuff revealed afterwards? Absolutely. You know, when I went to 6 and 7, I honestly say, and they taught me this, you're to go reflect, Mario. And I know my sponsor kept it real simple, and maybe more people are more in depth, and hopefully I'm not with the people I work with in the first time around when you come in, because it's all about not taking nothing in the beginning for me. It wasn't about, it was just I wanted to know how not to drink and use. You know, and the rest of the stuff we can fix later, and it all gets fixed. And he told me, you go home, he said, you open up the book, he says, and you read, and you see that from step 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, you haven't left out anything, Mario. He says, have you left out anything? And it wasn't nothing I could think of. I covered everything at that time what I could cover with him. You know, and he took step 5 apart a little bit, not a whole lot, meaning like I do with the guys that I work with now. We talk a lot about the fears and about our part of it. We have resentment, you know, I'm resentful at so-and-so because of this, because he did that to my wife. And then how does it affect me personally? What's my side of it? He didn't go into big details on that. He touched on it. That was all I needed, man. That was all I needed. And then I did 6 and 7. I got quiet. And I did 7, man. And I did that prayer. And then before I left his house, step 5, we wrote. We wrote the list of the people I had needed to be amends to. It was written down. And he told me to take it home. And if there's anyone else I wanted to add on to that, he says add it on. So I went home, I added, I don't know, 5 or 7 more people, places, things that I thought I needed to make amends to for step number 9. I brought it back to him, and we broke it down, and he said, you need to do this one first, this one second, this one third, this one fourth, etc. When can you start? And I said, immediately. Immediately, I'll start right now. And I went off, man. And by the end of my first year of sobriety, all my men were taken care of except for one. And one of them will never, ever, ever be done, and I'm okay with that. And that's one of my wife. That's like a... I'll never catch up and be even, man, no matter what, you know. And I'm okay with that, but that's the only amends that was never ever. It's the daily amends. And yes, I took it off my list, but it's always on my list in the back of my head about my wife, about I need to make amends to her on a daily basis. I need to walk the walk to the best I can. Have I walked the walk to the best of my ability since I've been clean and sober? Absolutely not. Have I had any dry periods of not taking anything no matter what since I've been clean and sober? Absolutely have. Absolutely, I'd bullshit me if I told you I haven't. I don't take nothing no matter what. You know, but I've had periods where all I do is come to meetings every 48 hours. You know, I'm not into this taking a daily inventory at night sometimes. You know, and I'm the one that has to suffer about that. I'm into that now. Just for today, you know. But anyhow, I went through the steps with him. And I had to do all kinds of amends, but I'm a lightweight. You know, like I said, I barely made it in here probably to qualifying. I owed some insurance guy $600. I owed someone else $385. I had to go to my mom and my stepfather got divorced. And you know, damn it. He's a real smart computer wizard in those days. It's a long time ago. 85. I had to go to his house. I said, hey, Frank, how you doing? How's your new wife? And I said, well, Frank, I'm here to I'm joining this. And oh, by the way, when I went into it and I shared with him, this is the way I did. I never got into details about the program Alcoholics Anonymous for me. I said, you know what, Frank, I drank a little bit too much, used a little bit too much, and I don't do that stuff anymore. And part of my requirement is to clean up my records of the past and make things right. And you remember that night you were out of town and you were, after your mom got divorced, you didn't come out of the way. And you lost all those tools, those toolboxes. I had a lot, man. And 2 days later, I brought him back to your house and told you I beat the shit out of the guy that stole them. He says, yeah. I said, well, I'm the guy that told him. You know, and I don't know how I can make things right. You got your tools back, but you know what? It's been something that I thought about on occasion. And, you know, and if there's anything you need down the road, I'll try to be there for you. You know, and that was it, and I walked away. And, whatever, he shook my hand, and then he, it was a good deal. It was a good deal. Insurance guy had to go to him and say, you know what, Mr. State Farm Jeff, you know that fence that fell down 5 years ago? Well, the one on the left, the wind did knock it down, but I didn't like the one on the right, the design, so I knocked that one down. And I'm here to straighten it out now. Oh, it's $600, right? Yeah, you know, I had to take care of that. I used to steal 10 speeds. If you were in college and you lost 10 feet, they'll come to me for demands that I already made. My sponsor told me the amount of dollars, and I took the money, and he told me how much, and we figured out my 10 feet. And he said, you can't find these people at this college. This was, he says, you were to make that amends to a nonprofit organization. And I made that amends, and I paid cash anonymously to a nonprofit organization. So they couldn't take any credit for that. That's just some of the amends I had to make. The ones to my family, those are big. But those are amends that you have to do. But saying you're sorry is a start, but to me, you got to walk it. And I'm not walking great, but I'm okay. I mean, my parents are divorced, like I told you. I guess the word is executor of their estates or whatever. They don't have a lot. My dad has a lot, but my mom doesn't. So I got the wills for both of them in sobriety. And I got three older brothers, right? And they want me to just make things right in both families because of, I guess, what AA has taught me. Okay? My wife absolutely has, she has so much faith in the program Alcoholics Anonymous that it works. Does she understand to the degree I do? Is she an Al-Anon? No. She absolutely thinks this is one of the most powerful programs in the world. She doesn't know a lot about it. I mean, she knows a lot about it, but she doesn't know the ins and outs like the way I do. And she has so much faith in this program. And that's the same lady, and I forgot to tell you this, and I would be reneged if I didn't, and that once I worked the steps, my first year, I came to rationalization. I was okay with Mario. I went to the movies by myself. I've never done that before. So I didn't like being by myself, especially when I was clean. I would like to be loaded, you know, not deal with life. And I had so much fun going by myself. Then I came to her one day after I'd worked the steps, and I told her, you know what, Vern? I says, I don't want you to take this the wrong way. I said, but God forbid if you should come, no longer be here, you know what? I want to share with you. I'm going to be all right. You know, I'll just take up and leave off. I'll take care of the kids. I'm okay with me that I don't need you in that respect. And I fell in love with her. That's what I identified with what love is. So when I got clean with being okay with me, I got to the point where I could understand what it is, what love is. Love is an action word. You know, and I haven't been 100% in that with her in our sobriety, but I've been pretty damn close with her, you know. So it's good, you know, and I had, my life is so good right now in respect of when I come to AA and I have Pucky going on, which I've had. I get in here and I listen to the brothers and sisters that have some real Pucky going on, and my Pucky, every time it clicks over, is not that big of a deal that I can't get through it. I've never been able to top everybody by walking into the group and saying, I'm really going through some stuff, and I hope I don't have to get there. You know, and that's how it's been for me in sobriety. It's been real good, you know. And I want to share amends with you. Sobriety's real good. You know, my brother's a cop, the oldest guy. Tony. Vietnam veteran. Love him. You know, 1 year before I came in AA, I was going fishing because that's what I do on my spare time. And he lives in Pinole, and I went by there to get the key because he has private property, and there's a stream that goes through there that the residents own property go to. So I went over there. I've come in with my buddy Fred from high school, my football partner, who's a heavy drinker, but not one of us. And my brother goes to get the key, and he has a police dog, too, you know, and the dog's making noise and stuff. So what do? This is 5 o'clock in the morning, man. I reach in the refrigerator and grab a beer. I pull out some Crank. I cut it on his table. My buddy Fred goes, "What the hell are you doing?" I go, "That's my effing brother. Don't worry about it, man." And then we sorted it. My brother comes out and he sees us doing the crank on that thing. Well, he sees me. Fred wouldn't do it. And I had to go, and I needed to go make amends to my brother for that. And how do you make amends for your brother for that? Well, you make amends. I don't know how you did it, but what I did was I need to eat crow and tell him that, you know, it wasn't a big deal to me when I did it then, and it is now, in hindsight. I didn't even give it a second thought then, and how I could invade his privacy and disrespect him like that. And I was pretty sure, I didn't go into details, that if I stay on the path that I am today, that I probably would never, ever do that again. You know, and it's been, like I tell you, in a month I'll get lucky enough to get 16 years, maybe. You know, so I'm tickled pink with Alcoholics Anonymous. And I brought these five cue cards up, and I only looked at the first one. So that shows you where that goes, and thanks for letting me share. And you know, and I just want to talk to them and tell them. Thanks, Kim. My name's Mario. I'm an alcoholic addict. Oh, that was cute. Okay, it's okay to have coffee while I'm up here speaking. I want to thank Mark for asking me to be the speaker here. This is the third time I've had the opportunity, and this is my home group, so this is the only place I've been going to do a speaker meeting. And next month, if I stay sober, and by the grace of God, I'll have 16 years. And so I guess it's mandatory that they ask you every 5 years plus to speak, even if they don't want to hear you or not. So that's all good. I took the liberty of writing some things down, and the reason why I did that is because I wanted to, first of all. And second thing is, if you know me, a couple of my partners back there can attest to it, I forget things. And you know, I forget how it was, I swear to God. And, you know, we talk about in this fellowship that you better not ever, ever, ever forget the last drink. And I assure you, I've never, ever forgotten that weekend prior to the last drink. But you know what? I got a forgetter here, and I used to think it was one of my biggest defects of character. I'm real bad on names, and I don't do it out of disrespect. I'm real bad on remembering things of the past. And you know what? That's become one of my biggest assets in sobriety, forgetting all that wreckage of the past and stuff. It has, man. You know, and I used to dwell on it, and I was worried about going back to school, and I had to take some computer classes for my job. And I've been with the same company for 28 years, and I was really worried about it. You know, it's kind of bumming me out. And my buddy Mike B., I talked to him when they sold the company, and I'd share with my sponsor about what's going to happen to me. And you know what? I went back there, and I took these classes, and it's all good. You know, it's not no big deal. And you know what? There was 15 people in the class, and I wasn't the center of attention like I wanted to be. You know, I just, they weren't focused on me, on how I was doing there. And that was real good. And what I wanted to touch on first was, you know, the perception people have of me. Yeah, I'm amazed. Last week, this guy named Tony Tony and Karen from Hollister, fantastic people. Tony comes up to me, and he says, "Hi, Mario." And I was talking to him, and I said, "Hello." And Tony delivers, or he was delivering, working for Airborne, packages to my wife 5 days a week at the publishing company she works for in Los Gatos. And he's told me a number of times, "Man, your wife, she just got a fantastic personality. She's just a dynamite woman, and she's always so." When you come and greet her, man, she's always so happy, you know, and she's, you know, she's just a really nice person. And then the dude looks at me and he says, and he pauses and he says, "And I can't understand how two people, you know, so different." Because, yeah. He goes, "Because